You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on this week's RedCafe.net podcast, we discuss the season so far, the reasons behind some of our more exotic signings, and take a look at our favourite Ole Solskjaer moments. With Sunderland visiting Old Trafford at the weekend, we have Colin Randall of Salu Sunderland back on the show to discuss the match.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 61 of the redcafe.net podcast. Yeah, it's me, Stephen Darwin, and yes, I'm joined by Dan and Dov. Guys, how on earth are you doing this week?
Fine, thanks. Just flying through the snow. That's about it, really.
Flying through the snow, like it.
Yeah, no, went shopping and stuff, so Christmas. Apart from that, it's been all good.
Has it been affecting your life quite as much as it has the football calendar?
Not really, to be fair, no. I was hoping that, obviously, it'd snow really, really loads and I wouldn't have to go to work, but that's not happened, so good.
And you're still having to do your podcast duties as well. The snow doesn't get you out of that.
No, it won't, no. I enjoy this sort of... sort of work though, it's fine.
Good stuff. Dov, how are you doing this week?
Yeah, I'm not bad. The snow finally has started to affect me as well. I've been laughing at all you people in the UK with the Heathrow being closed and everybody complaining. But then on Sunday, I tried to go to the Genoa Derby and that got called off due to snow. So I decided to go and have a pizza after to sort of commiserate in essence. And then I was watching on the TV and I showed you pictures of the people trying to clear the pitch. And they were trying to use it, they were using leaf blowers to clear the snow off pitch. So there's a novel way of trying to get a game to go ahead, which was ridiculous to say the least. But yeah, so that kind of ruined my weekend a little bit. But other than that, everything is all good.
So any Chelsea ground staff that might happen to be listening to the show this week should have got the leaf blowers out and we might have had a game on. But we'll start there. I mean, there's not a lot you can say really, but obviously the Chelsea game was postponed due to the weather. Amazingly, I'm gonna make a question out of this, Dan. I mean, does that cancellation, I mean, does it suit us perhaps maybe more than it does them, or do you not think really anyone's got an advantage out of that?
No, we would have wanted to play that game, I think. The only thing is, when it gets rearranged, Chelsea will have all the top players back and it'll be, you know, they'll be on form and everything else, but it's always the way, isn't it? I honestly don't see why the game wasn't on, to be fair. The pitch, actually, there was an aerial view of it and it was fine, and it's just, I know all the walkways around the ground and stuff, but yeah, I'm not being funny, but like, the rugby games are on. Shopping centres were still open in London and the surrounding areas, so why can't you have a football game? I don't understand it.
Did you see the Ipswich as well? I think that was one of the only games in the UK. And for any listeners that didn't see it, it was literally a snow-covered pitch, no exaggeration, using the orange ball, and they managed to get on with it. So,
there's no reason. It's all they all use this line about spectator safety and all this. Like, come on, give me a break. You know, everyone knows how to walk to a football ground. Similarly, last year against Leeds, though, at Old Trafford, it was just as bad as this. Yeah, our game went ahead, you know, and there was no problems there. It's rubbish.
Maybe that's the people in Manchester and the North are harder than the people in London, so they're just like, no, we're not having none of that.
I don't know what it is. I think it's just because Chelsea were a bit concerned that, obviously, United were coming down in decent form. Chelsea are a bit poor at the moment, and then would have got turned over, so I don't know.
I think you got a point, to be honest. I think if they're absolutely flying...
If they're flying and they're 2 points... Yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't know. How can they justify it? I don't get it.
It's an interesting one. But something else that obviously took place last week, guys, which we discussed in the show, was the Champions League draw. That's all clear and mapped out now. Marseille in the last 16. Dov, happy enough with that? I mean, it could have been a lot worse, I suppose. And Won't be an easy game by any stretch of the imagination, but no, it's a favourable draw, let's just say that.
Yeah, no, I think it was a good draw. Even better, though, I'll get to go to the game in Marseille because it's not a far train ride from where I live as well, a few hours on the train, so I'll be looking forward to going to that. But I've seen them a couple of times. I've seen Marseille a couple of times. I've had to watch Ligue 1 on the other occasion, and they're quite a pacey attacking side, so... we'll see what happens there if they can get past Rio and Vidic and Van der Sar and the like, but I think over two legs we will be we should be looking to be a team of Marseille standard. No disrespect to them, but we're better than them essentially.
Yeah, Dan, happy enough with it? I mean, I think you mentioned that you'd be happy to take anyone on at this stage, but no, it does look a good draw for us.
Yeah, it looks like it. We should go through over the two legs, but we've got concerns when we go away from home. We might get beaten away from home, but I think at Old Trafford, I think we should really be able to beat Marseille. Of course, Gabby Heinze as well returning. I wonder what sort of reception he'll get after declaring he wanted to move to Liverpool. It could be interesting. Yeah, could be interesting.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well then, guys, obviously Christmas coming up, I suppose you could say it's just about the halfway mark, just past the halfway mark. I mean, how would you assess everything so far in terms of how the season's gone? Dov, obviously the League Cup loss to West Ham's the big sort of, black mark on it. But no, top of the table at Christmas and through to the Champions League knockout stages, there's not a lot else you could ask for, really.
I think the word you would describe it would be workmanlike, maybe. We've not played. I think you can only really see maybe one or two games, Blackburn game being the highlight, where we've played probably to our full potential, and that showed in the scoreline. We had the little blip where I think we just kept kept losing late goals and drawing far too many games at the start of the season. So at that time, you sort of wondered and thought, where we would be if we would manage to, if Chelsea would run away with it, because at that time they were in fantastic form, scoring goals for fun. And then suddenly we just plugged away, got 3 points after 3 points, and gradually the difference between the sides away, and we're top of the league, and you can't ask any more than that, because there's nowhere else to go. And again, with the Champions League, the group stage, all you need to do is qualify from it, first or second. Obviously you want first, but all you need to do is qualify. Again, done that, and unbeaten in both those competitions. So we've got the results, although not in a United-like fashion, you would say. But I mean, just over the last three or four weeks, the highlight for me has been Anderson sort of coming in and sort of kind of showing us what the player he can be. And I've always been a fan of his, but I just think it's good that he's kind of shown us that he could be that attacking threat that we need and that we've been looking for a long time. So I think all in all, it's not a fantastic season so far, but you can't grumble with where we're sitting in the respective competitions.
Stuff, Dan, would you go along with that? I said earlier, we're halfway through the season. I think that was a bit of an exaggeration. We've only played 16 league games, but no, you were relatively pleased with what's gone on so far?
Yeah, I mean, like Dov said, you know, the way that we were throwing leads away at the beginning of the season was a bit worrying, but at least we were going into the lead, which is a positive way to look at it. We were taking games to, you know, teams, and we just couldn't hold on for whatever reason, lack of form or sort of, you know, the wrong sort of mentality. But that seems to have been sorted out now, and you know, key players coming back. Like Anderson, if he can stay in and around the team for the rest of the season, it'll give us a good chance. We've obviously got in the second half of the season, you know, Valencia to come back as well on the right, which will give us a bit of a boost. But you know, we're in a great position, top of the league. You can't ask more than that. You know, we'd obviously like to be like 10 points ahead at Christmas, but you're not really going to get that in many leagues, are you? But no, I mean, a lot of it though is down to poor form of the teams around us as well, you know, like Chelsea, they've not been brilliant since like the sort of first few months of the season. And they've gone downhill as well, inconsistency at City and at Arsenal. And obviously Liverpool just, well, being Liverpool really. So, yeah, I mean, you've got to be happy, haven't you? You've got to be happy.
Certainly have. Well, we'll move on to email section now then, guys. We've got a few in after my cry last week to try and get people involved. Yeah, we've got one regarding the Clichy penalty incident that we asked people to get in touch about. Obviously, Dan adamant that it was a definite penalty. Myself and Dov, maybe not quite as sure, but Awab has emailed in. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. He says that although Clichy clearly didn't mean it, his hand stopped the ball going past him, so he believes it should have been a penalty. So from the limited response we've had on the emails, Dan, you've got a victory there. So,
well, can I retort to Mr. Awab? His answer supports the fact that it wasn't a penalty because he used the fact he didn't mean it, and the keyword in the rules is deliberate.
We got another email from Aaron Holtzclaw. He talks about the signing of Javier Hernandez, and he lives in Los Angeles, Aaron does, and he just sort of saying that there's a lot of sort of replica Hernandez shirts floating around that sort of area, not just Manchester United shirts. Apparently you can get a half Chivas, half Manchester United shirt, so that's quite an interesting design. But I sort of, this is from me really. I mean, guys, do you think the signing of Hernandez, obviously is hugely talented player, and he's going to have a big future, but was that a deliberate attempt, do you think, to tap into the market, the North American market?
No. Look, people said this about Ji-Sung Park when we bought him, and it's ridiculous. You know, look at the impact that Park's had over the years for United. You know, not more so than last week, and it's just, you know, people always say that it's just all about increasing merchandise and getting some more money into the coffers, but I think it's highly disrespectful as well, really.
I want to say that isn't my view, by the way. I'm just,
well, that it sounded like it came out of your mouth. Came out of your mouth. So I don't know. No, I don't know. I think it's really. Why? Obviously, it's a bonus, but he's not gone. Oh, I'm going to buy that lab there just because he's Mexican.
No, I'm not saying that, but I mean it helped. It's a positive thing that you're able to take advantage of that sort of thing. That if you're able to sell shirts and the like in places that maybe you wouldn't have the support in the past. I mean, it's slightly a bit of a silly statement, really, because Manchester United are huge all over the world. But
I can see the Park thing, because obviously Asia is a massive sort of catchment area if you want to get it. But at the same time, you know, he's played well for Korea. You know, a lot of the time he's played well for United, and Hernandez has played well for Mexico. He's impressed when he was at Chivas, and we went and took the gamble on him. Things like, you know, Real Madrid buying David Beckham, that was something that you could possibly see to be sort of, you know, merchandise and revenue, because obviously Beckham's a brand name, he's a global icon, and Ronaldo similarly, you know, but Hernandez is nowhere at that level yet, so I don't know how you can, you know, suggest that it's just because, you know, we want to get some Mexican fans wearing sombreros. Not true.
I'm not saying that at all, Dan, but I just wanted to put a question to the email. So yeah, that was the reason.
All right. So when we bought Tim Howard, did we do it to get into the American market?
I think what Steve's sort of getting at is that if you've got two players, say one's English, and one's North American or Mexican or whatever, the English market's there has got they're the same level of ability. Would you buy the guy from North America, from Mexico, so you could tap into that market? In that sense, it's not that obviously the guys have to be good enough, which is, I think, is what you're getting at, Dan. Is the guys have to be good enough to go to United anyway? So I don't think that being Mexican, they thought, oh, we need a Mexican guy. Well, we'll get him. He's good. They need to have they thought, well, he's a very good player. He's Mexican. It's a bonus, and I think that's why they played the friendly in against Chivas as well, to sort of raise their profile there, because I think that's what the Glazers want to do. They want to raise their profile as much places as they can.
I thought that we played that Chivas game because Hernandez wanted to say
it's a new stadium, wasn't it?
It's like when we went to the one in Ireland, the Aviva Stadium. You know, we went there to open that, so I don't know. It, obviously, it's got bonuses, of course it has, you know, but I don't think it was, Fergie didn't, you know, like, go out and go, I want that lab there. So,
right, of course he didn't. Of course he didn't.
Oh, good. We're all understood.
Right. Also, a congratulations to Aaron as well, whose wife is pregnant with their first son. So, big congratulations from us on the podcast team.
Well done.
Can we get a name as well? What is the
Dan?
The
call it Dan.
Call it Dov.
That's a great name.
Call it Steve.
Yeah. That's, I'd endorse that. It's a fantastic idea. Eddie Dulat, he sent in an email asking why Darren Gibson just isn't sort of in the reckoning at all anymore. I think we talked about this off air, and Dan was suggesting that he's got a bit of an injury at the moment. But he's in terms of his general playing time since sort of towards the end of last season, he's just not really had a look in. I mean, is that fair considering when he has been given the chance, he's done pretty well, to be fair?
You're saying no, he's done pretty well, but I remember a podcast a few months ago, and you know, we're all having a bit of a pop at him because he can't pass a ball, he can't run, he's not athletic enough. Would Gibson be playing in the first team if he was fit anyway right now? Answer's probably no. So as I say, we've missed him, would be a bit far to go, but he's obviously an average player, but whether or not he can turn it into being a star is another matter.
I think we've said on a few occasions as well, the best he's probably going to hope for is being a squad player at United. I don't think personally he's good enough to get a first team place at all. And he's not particularly young anymore in the sense that he's an 18-year-old, 19-year-old breaking through. I think he's, what, nearly 24, I think. And I think he might be one that's moved on in the summer. If he's maybe not guaranteed first team football or something like that, I don't think he's got it in him to play in the first team for United.
Okay, valid points from both of you. Well, we'll move on to look at, well, return for youth team and reserve team football. It's been quite a while since we've been able to talk about that side of things. Dov, we'll start with the reserves, and they played Newcastle in what was Ole Solskjaer's final match before he heads off to Mulder. And it was a pretty pleasing send-off as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Steve. United were playing Newcastle United, who are top of the reserve Premier League, and they beat them soundly, 5-1. A couple of goals from Ravel Morrison, a couple from Will Keane, and one from Ryan Tunnicliffe. Ravel Morrison opened the scoring. Will Keane doubled the lead just before half-time. He also missed a penalty early in the second half. Michael Richardson then pulled on back for Newcastle. But then United went to sort of power to him. Ravel Morrison got his second. Tunnicliffe got the fourth. And then Will Keane headed home in injury time at the end of the game to make it 5. And like I say, Solskjaer's last match as reserve team manager. Newcastle's defending was not the best, as you would imagine. Ryan Tunnicliffe was fantastic. United dominated. Marnik Vermeer was another one who had a really good game. And Magnus Ekrem was at his creative best, as you would expect. Again, Will Keane, this boy is... He was doing it sort of for the academy side, number 18s, like his last season, and he sort of made the step up to the reserves, and he just gets himself into goal-scoring opportunities, and more often than not, he puts the ball in the back of the net, which you can't complain. You can't complain about whatsoever. I think, obviously, the main talking point was Ole Solskjaer leaving United after a good number of years and lots of good memories, but we'll talk about that in a second. We'll briefly go over the academy. They played at Crewe Alexandra, and unfortunately they managed, they got a 3-2 defeat against Crewe. John Coffey, he put the Reds ahead after just 10 minutes, and then Crewe levelled on 23 minutes. 5 minutes later they took the lead from a penalty spot, but Sean McGinty made it 2-2 on half an hour, and then Crewe, they managed to regain the lead just before half time, and it's seen the game out from there. It was a bit of a to and fro game, to be honest, that one, but a couple of good performances. McGinty, he was one of the better performers in that game as well. But like you say, the main talking point for the reserves and academy this week has been the departure of Ole Solskjaer. So I would like to put a question to you guys. Sorry, I'm in your chair, Steve. What are your memories of Solskjaer at United, apart from the obvious one in the new camp in 1999, because that's be the one everybody would pick?
Go on then, Dan, I'll let you take the floor to start with.
Well, there's so many to choose from. I'm trying to think which one I think is the best moment. The one I mean, obviously he scored on his debut. I think it was against Blackburn he scored, and that was obviously a good little moment for him. But obviously we didn't know much about Solskjaer then. But for me, it's the when he hacked down Rob Lee when at Old Trafford. I can't remember what year it was. It might have been 1997, 1998, something like that. And
98.
Solskjaer, full length. And Rob Lee was one-on-one with with was it Van der Hauw? It might have been Van der Hauw actually. And he just hacked him down. It was brilliant. He knew he was going to get sent off for it. And I read a story a few weeks ago, actually, that Fergie absolutely bollocked him as well for it, because he said, "But as long, you know, we want to win, but we want to win fairly." And I think he got fined for doing it, which is, it's not unbelievable, but it's quite funny, really. And he just had to accept it. So, yeah, I think that moment for me was brilliant. Showed his desire and commitment to the club and obviously taking one for the team as well.
Oh, on the spot. Well, obviously, 99. But if you want to go away from 99, the four goals, was it against Forest? 8-1, yeah, I remember the four goals there. So I think that was the big highlight, other than, obviously, his 99 heroics. But, no, just generally, it just seems to be a player that you could always rely on. And when you say particular highlights with him, you might not say, oh, he was... like scored the winning goal in however many games against Liverpool, he did whatever against Man City. He seemed to consistently perform, and obviously he had the renown for being so deadly off the bench as well. And I think that's a bit of a disservice really to him. Like you might look back in years to come and say, oh yeah, Solskjaer was the man that always produced from the bench, but he was so much more than that.
I think so. One of the reasons he produced from the bench is he's always been known as a guy who reads the game well. Mm. So you think he's sitting on the bench, he's watching what's going on, how the opposition are playing, and then comes off the bench and obviously he's analysed this and he's been like noted as being very good at it, and came on and thought, right, I need to do this, and this. Bang, goal, etc.
The good thing about that four goals, Steve, that he's got in as far as I think Dwight York and Andy Cole are both on two each. And then obviously yeah. Solskjaer came on and just got four goals. So you can see, absolutely gutted. But no, it was good stuff, good stuff.
And Dov, any particular highlight that's different from those two?
I'd maybe say actually his last goal for United. I think it was against Charlton in 2006. And I was away. And he went up to the away end and bowed to the away end a little bit, who had done the same. And it was after about 3 years or something where like hardly played a game, and I mean he was always there and you'd always wanted to see him score, and he hadn't done it for so long, and is that he got that goal, one last goal in a United shirt, and it was just a fantastic moment as well. So I'll pick that one, given that the two other ones I would have chosen have gone as well. You could also go the goals he scored against Liverpool in 1999 as well.
The FA Cup one was very good.
FA Cup, yeah. It's loads of those. You could be here all day picking out the goals he scored and things he's done. So I would be sad to see him go. But do you think he'll come back?
I don't know. I would say he would, definitely, yeah. Yeah. If he does well, of course, he might be an absolute flop, and he might be rubbish at management, but I imagine he'll probably still always have it as a coach. There's always a place for someone like Solskjaer at United, I reckon.
Well, we're piling in the tributes for Solskjaer, guys, but another man that we should recognise, really, our longest-serving manager now in Sir Alex Ferguson at the club. It's terrific, isn't it, Dov? I don't think you can say anything else, really. He's just been an absolute phenomenon for the club and the history of the club as well.
Yeah, he's done not bad, hasn't he, really? Not a bad wee stint as a manager. I can remember, and I think it was around about the time when we weren't doing so well, sort of the 2003-04 time, and people were calling for his head, saying he should be sacked, he'd had it. How he showed them.
What's amazing, though, that teams now are so quick to get rid of managers. When you look at the people that have had success, they're the ones that have stuck by their managers. It just doesn't seem to add up, but... the search for success. Chairman seem to think they'll do anything to get it. But no, it's fitting, really, that Ferguson's done so well, having been given so much faith. Do you think it'll ever be matched, Dan, at all in football ever? Like a manager doing as well as Ferguson does and sort of staying in the job as long as he has at the top level?
A manager might win the amount of trophies that he's won, but I don't think he'll ever win them at the same club, you know, consistently. I know he won trophies at Aberdeen as well, but to win as many league titles as he has done, FA Cups and European Cups at United, is absolutely amazing. And one of the good things about it is he's kept up that tradition of playing good football for the majority of the time as well. You know, there has been times, of course, when he's resorted to grinding a game out, but nine times out of ten, you know, he'll go out there and he'll try and pass the ball around and he'll try and do it in an attacking manner. I mean, you think about the teams in sort of like the mid-90s and especially the late-90s, you know, the way we were passing the ball, we were just dominating teams and pace and power and obviously just brilliant players and great teamwork. And that's always been the case with Ferguson. And it's fitting that obviously he should take over from another decent manager in Busby. And it's brilliant, really. You know, because, you know, although I never saw, you know, those teams play, you know, you hear about the history of the club and how the, you know, the Busby Babes and all this sort, and how they were a very good team, you know, attacking football and everything else. So it's fantastic. And like I say, I don't think many managers will do it in the same style as what Ferguson's done. Because we've seen at Arsenal, you know, Arsenal, they had a few years of success and then it's tailed away again. And they're struggling to get back up to it now. But Ferguson, he's always been consistent.
The thing is as well, he's good at changing things. If he sees something's not working, he'll change it. And it's that's maybe where Arsenal have sort of fell down. Arsene Wenger's got his philosophy that he wants to stick to and he won't change it for anything, whereas Fergie's sort of right, okay, this isn't working, we'll do this. And he evolves, he builds new teams, which, again, you have to give him credit for. He's been around long enough to build like three or four fantastic sides. So,
One of the other things is, as well, you know, he's been at United since like 86, was it? And the different sort of management styles that are required to manage your players in that time as well, from the late 80s through the 90s to now. You know, the world's changed, and obviously money in football has changed as well, and he's had to deal with different personalities. I mean, you know, he's gone from someone like Paul Parker, who I imagine wasn't the extrovert, and to going to Wayne Rooney and Dwight York, you know, who were very outgoing, and we know they were in the papers all the time.
And even now, he's still being challenged. I mean, look at what happened with the Rooney stuff. I mean,
exactly. Yeah,
I think that showed. I think he admitted himself that was one of the biggest sort of challenges he's had as United manager, sort of in having his main talisman. That's, well, you're hoping you build a team around for the next sort of 5 or 6 years, to turn around and saying he doesn't want to be there anymore. So that was quite a challenge. And obviously the Ronaldo stuff as well. You got the best player you've had in, I think we'd all agree, in a long time, in Ronaldo playing for us, and suddenly he's saying he wants to go to Real Madrid and all this. So he managed to keep hold of him for that extra season or so, and it proved pivotal at the end, because we obviously went on to win more trophies with him sort of being the main focal point. So, yes.
Another good thing as well, Steve, sorry to interrupt, but it's, you know, the fact that, you know, Beckham won that award at the weekend, and he was talking about Ferguson when he accepted it, and it's that for Ferguson, sitting at home watching that, he must have thought, oh, I'm actually quite proud of Beckham, you know what I mean? Because, you know, Beckham's been through a lot. You know, Beckham, like we said before, is a brand name. He's done everything, really. And, you know, for him to keep saying that Ferguson's like a father figure and United is a club that he cherishes and everything else, it must make Ferguson proud, because, of, you know, Ferguson helped make Beckham what he is today. You know, instilled a bit of discipline in him and things like that. So, you know, it's brilliant. You're never going to get another Sir Alex Ferguson, are you?
Would he do the ultimate favour for Beckham, Ferguson, bring him back to United to improve his England hopes? I mean, he was asked, wasn't he, in that interview, whether he sort of consider a move to Europe, and he was saying, oh, if it was England, it would only be United. He says he doesn't hold out, he doesn't hold his breath, or something similar to that. But you never know, sort of thing. So could it ever happen?
Maybe, you know, something we don't. But I can't see Ferguson. He's too proud, isn't he, Ferguson, to go back on what he thought. But personally, I think it'd be good if Beckham came back to United on loan till the end of the season or whatever. It might give us that little boost as well. You know, just lift the place a little bit more. So yeah, I don't know, but it could work the other way. You know, then who do you drop out of the team to put Beckham in? If you know what I mean. So it's a tough one, isn't it?
Be nice to have someone who can.
No room for sentiment in football, Steve.
Yeah, be not. Be nice to have someone who can beat the first man from a corner, because
it would, yes, yeah.
Nanny's mastered that yet, has he?
Just get Beckham in just to teach Nanny how to take a corner.
Exactly, yeah. Well, another slight news line. Dimitar Berbatov, the man you love to hate, Dov, he picked up the Bulgarian Footballer of the Year award. Very humble when he received the award, saying that people shouldn't vote for him, but for younger players. It's good to see, isn't it?
I think it's how many, is that like, was it seventh in a row or something like that? I think it's the seven Bulgarian Player of the Year awards in a row. It's not got much competition, though, let's be honest, but it's like Stylian Petrov, Martin Petrov, Valery Bodjanov, I think.
Bodjanov, I think he's been injured for the past 5 years, hasn't he, Bodjanov?
Best player in Bulgaria, what can you say?
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
As you know, this is the part of the show where we have an opposition fan to talk about our upcoming fixture with us. And I'm delighted to welcome back Colin Randall from Salu Sunderland. Colin, welcome back to the show. It's not been very long since we last spoke to you.
No, we were talking just before the rather drab goalless draw early in the season.
Indeed, and your sides went on and produced some quite fantastic performances, whereas we have been a bit lackluster, to say the least, apart from a couple of games as well. But we'll talk about the game you just mentioned there, the 0-0 draw. What were your thoughts on it? Because obviously United were poor, had one shot on target, I think, during the whole game. Really, were lucky to get away with the draw. So what were your thoughts on it as a Sunderland fan?
I didn't really think it was a good game at all. I'm glad that we played reasonably well. We didn't look like losing, I didn't think, at any point. I was never that worried. But we didn't look terribly much like winning either. And it was one of those games where we played well enough without setting the world on fire. And it's been a bit like our season. We played well in a few games. We played steadily in many games. We've only played abysmally in a small number. That was I have to say, Sunderland versus Man U early in the season is eminently forgettable.
We shall move on and not talk about it any longer because it doesn't deserve the airtime. Right, you've got a number of good strikers at your team, namely Asamoah Gyan and Darren Bent, and obviously Danny Welbeck. Can I get your thoughts on your strike force? Because, quite frankly, it's been fantastic to watch and has managed to get you a couple of good results. So your thoughts on Gyan and Bent first, and then we'll move on to Mr. Welbeck.
Right, Gyan and Bent. Well, I was there on Saturday when we had all three on the pitch at the same time, and it was actually wonderful to watch them at times going forward together, you know, any two of the three involved in a build-up. And we could have scored more goals. I mean, obviously, we could have conceded as well. Bolton had their moments. But it was invigorating. It was really, really an eye-opener to see the fluency and the threat that they posed. Bent has been a little bit off-colour, but he has been injured. And he's come back probably too quickly from injury and doesn't look quite as sharp as he was. But, of course, the plus side is that he's no longer the only player in the field who's scoring for us. You know, there was a time when an own goal was a joint second top scorer this season. That's no longer the case. We've got Gyan scoring, we've got Welbeck scoring. Still haven't got much coming from midfield, but I think it'll come. And Bent's control for the shot, which was parried, and then Welbeck scored on Saturday, was immense.
What are your thoughts on Welbeck? I think if memory serves me correctly, you kind of mentioned that it wasn't really starting as many games, more a substitute or playing maybe 60, 70 minutes and coming off. But he seems to have kind of cemented a place in the side. I mean, what are your thoughts on his?
I think played purely out wide, or you know, in a midfield role, he was lost a little bit, and it just wasn't really working. There are people coming to my site and saying that he was an absolute, you know, he was a waste of time and not the player for us. I think we, in particular my colleague Pete Sixsmith, who sees every single game, whereas I see as many as I can, which isn't always as many as I'd like. Pete identified the quality and the imbalance in the game, and that he wasn't really being played to his best potential. But I think he's been an absolute revelation in the last few weeks, basically since the tonking at Newcastle, you know, where he, like everyone else, was appalling. But since then, he's been on fire. I think he's probably the star performer among the outfield players in that period.
So you reckon you'll miss him at the weekend then?
I will definitely miss him, yes, and would certainly miss him if he went back to United, which is probably the most likely outcome of the loan, since I don't think you could afford the top-up fee if you wanted Henderson in return. Well, I'll get that in somewhere.
Yeah, we'll run with it a little bit because I'm going to answer the question for something that I've done for your site. So you would say that it'd be Jordan Henderson and some money, Danny Welbeck, sorry, and some money for Jordan Henderson and not the other way around.
That's my mischief-making proposition, yes.
Yeah. Fair enough, okay. I shall retort in due course. Right, well, one of the players who's been playing, I think he's been playing in a central midfield position, is Bolo Zenden. When he's played, I think he's been one of your better players, possibly the best player in each game that I've seen him playing. Why doesn't he start as many games as his performances might merit?
I suspect that Bruce doesn't feel he's got a full 90, 95 minutes in him, and that he is much, much better deployed as the man who comes on to steady the ship, usually in the second half at some stage. I would agree. Every time I've seen him come on, with the exception of Saturday, he's played the role to perfection. He's steadied the ship, he's shown Premiership class. Just that bit of guile which some of our other players haven't actually got. Saturday was a slightly different scenario where he came on for Gian at a time when Gian was still quite lively and just put in a fantastic cross from which we needed to go a second goal. And I thought at the time it was an odd decision to substitute him then, but was reassured because it was Barlow coming on. But I think Barlow went on to concede possession too much and basically have one of his weaker cameo roles. But generally speaking, I'd go along, precisely with you. He's been a star player.
And do you think he would start at the weekend against United, maybe to give your side a little bit more experience?
I think that would be a good idea, especially with the lack of Welbeck. I think that Bruce has got to look at that sort of option. You know, this is a player who will not be fazed by the atmosphere, will not be overawed, has done it, seen it all before, and I think he'd be very good. And we've reached the stage where we've got talent on the bench, so it's not the end of the world if Bolo comes on and doesn't last the pace. I mean, I think he's remarkably fit for, given a man in his, mid-30s, but I just speculate that maybe Bruce either thinks he hasn't got week after week a full game in him, or feels that he's, generally speaking, better used for the holding role in the second half.
Yeah, we've been out for this for 7-8 minutes now, and we haven't mentioned Craig Gordon yet. Obviously, a lot of people have been talking about his magnificent save, or a wonder save, some would even call it, at the weekend. Could I get your thoughts on the save for a start, and then just thoughts on Craig Gordon as a goalkeeper and how you think he would develop?
I've been a great fan of Craig Gordon since I was living in Paris and saw him play for Scotland against France, and he saved the day for Scotland that day with some wonderful saves, and Scotland actually scored, as you well know. It's such a rare occasion for Scotland to win an international that you'll certainly remember it. And the entire French nation, football following nation, was drooling over Craig Gordon next day, and rightly so. The save on Saturday was tremendous. It was absolutely world class, well up there with the Montgomery double save in the 73 Cup final, because of the amount of control that he had to put into the saving action in the split second that he had. One of my more churlish readers came on and said, "Yeah, but he should have gone for the corner. He should have gone for the cross. He should have gone." And that has been an occasional gripe against Gordon. He doesn't always come off his line as fans would like. But I think that he is a terrific goalkeeper. I'm delighted he's come back from injury stronger than before, and I'm delighted that he's one of two tremendous keepers we have at the moment. Mignolet was in Gordon's place, had a cracking start to the season.
Indeed, he did. And obviously, Craig's managed to get his place back. And how do you think he'll develop? I mean, obviously, it costs a lot of money, it costs yourselves a lot of money. And do you think eventually he'll be moved on to one of the top clubs? Obviously, we're in the market for a goalkeeper, but he's not been one of the names mentioned. Arsenal have got goalkeeping problems. Do you think he'll move on eventually, or do you think he'll be at Sunderland for a little while yet?
Well, you can never say never in football. I just hope that we adopt the Spurs outlook and say, well, if someone wants him, we paid $9 million for him, and he's progressed with us rather than regressed. That's nine plus whatever it takes, and be as hard, drive as hard a bargain as we can. I hope very much that he doesn't leave. He's at a top club as far as I'm concerned, not a top performing club always, but I understand, you know, where players coming from if they want to move on, if temptation comes our way, and it's difficult to resist. But I just hope that he's happy at Sunderland. He realises he's valued there, that he's on a, I hope, enough money to keep him in whatever he. Pursuits he has with the training or kite flying, and doesn't need to move on to Man U, or you know, he can play for Scotland, be Scotland's number one while playing for Sunderland. It would help a great deal if we had another clean sheet on Sunday and were shown to be one of the top clubs, because you know we are up there in the top six or seven, and we're there on merit.
Yeah, indeed. Let's see, you're six in the table. And obviously you play United on Sunday, and you're playing very, very well at the minute. Obviously, people will probably mention or look at the game against Chelsea, where you went to Stamford Bridge and completely and utterly annihilated them. Do you think you can do the same at Old Trafford?
Well, that is the only time we've performed like that away from home this season. We've performed badly on the road. Better against the top clubs. I mean, Liverpool, you'd struggle to mention them in the context of top clubs this season, but we should have won at Anfield. We did win handsomely at Stamford Bridge. We should have won at Old Trafford last season. You know, we are capable of raising our game, of playing with the best. It's going to be a tough one because we've struggled with the back four to keep have a settled centre-back pairing. Through injury, we won't have John Mensah, and I happen to think John Mensah is an absolute rock, a man that, if he were fit the whole time, would be regarded as perhaps one of the best few centre backs in the world. But we have to make do with what we've got, and I suspect that will be this on Boxing Day. That will be Ferdinand and Onyewa in centre back, and hope that we turn out the team and the team spirit that we saw at Stamford Bridge rather than what we saw at Molineux or the Hawthorns.
Concerning the game on Sunday, how do you think Steve Bruce will set the team out? Do you think he'll go on attack, because he's been credited a lot this season for doing that against the bigger sides, and you've played well, like you mentioned, so do you think he'll do exactly the same against United, or do you think he'll give Fergie 3 points, which he likes to do as well?
If I were betting, I'd probably think that he'd go for 4-5-1. But you know, he may be emboldened by recent events, the post Newcastle, since the Newcastle debacle, and start with Gian and Bent up front. I got feelings that he won't, but Gian will still come on at some stage. But I think that I don't think we defend particularly well. When we go deep, and you know, you've seen us at Old Trafford starting off at 0-0 and hoping to hang on to 0-0. I don't think we're that kind of team anymore, and so I'm hoping for a bit more adventure. And even at 4-5-1, we have looked an adventurous team at times this season.
Just quickly on United, who's it you fear from United at the minute? Obviously, because we've got a few players who are in top form. For me, I think Anderson is in fantastic form, and has been since the game against Blackburn, which we won 7-1. And is he one of the players you'd be worried about coming from deep in midfield, or would it be the more standard Nani, Rooney, Berbatov?
Strike force is immense. You know, Berbatov was on fire in that game, and I mean the goals that were scored, some of them were just wonderful to watch. They were just great manifestations of football, passing football. Starting well, the move, and then finished clinically, and you know, you've got to worry about that quality of striker. You've also got to worry about Nani, not only because of his skill, but because he's also very adept at falling over in useful positions, which encourages referees to give him of my considerable doubt. And you know, you've got quality going through the squad. I don't think you're as strong as United of the past this season, but you know, you're in the right position in the league.
Before we let you go, if I could get a prediction off you, please, Colin.
Right, I think you'll hold us to one. I think it'll be a sneaky 1-0 away win.
Oh, there you go. Let's hope not. Like I said, if you haven't, go on to Salu Sunderland. I'll put a link up on the blog, so everybody listening, go on there, click on that. And everybody might get to read a little interview by myself on the blog as well before the game, so have a look at that.
If I said, we've got a couple of United supporters, yourself included, coming on to give their thoughts on the game, which is fantastic.
Indeed, isn't it? So everybody, go and check that out. Colin, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on again. Hey, maybe we'll get you in one of the cups later on, and you can come back, hopefully.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, that was the views of our opposition fan for this week. Guys, a couple of games coming up, of course, with a busy Christmas period. Sunday, Sunderland, as we've just said. And Tuesday, we've got Birmingham as well, away from home in the Premier League. Dan, I mean, how important will it be to sort of get maximum points from those games? Ferguson will undoubtedly, that will be the aim. But Birmingham away in particular, that's not an easy game, and Sunderland probably playing the best football they've played all season, arguably, obviously with on the back of the Chelsea win.
Yeah, Sunderland are doing very well this year. But I still think, you know, at Old Trafford, we should be taking the game to teams. I remember last year against Sunderland, it was 2-2, wasn't it? And when Ben Foster played and made a few mistakes. And we grabbed a last-minute goal as well. So they will be a tough team to beat. And it depends, really, because obviously we've not played now for... Well, since the Arsenal game, so it's quite a long stretch really without a game. So you're just wondering whether the players are going to be up for it, you know, having not jumped in from a game beforehand. But to have two games in 4 days, like you say, it will be a test for us. I fully expect us to beat Sunderland at home, and obviously you want to beat Birmingham at St Andrews as well. But I think, like you say, Birmingham will be a tough game. They're a hard team to beat at home. And I think a lot of people would probably take a point out of that game.
And Dov, just wanted to get your opinion on the teams really that might be picked. How Ferguson might line up. I mean, will he be tempted to go with sort of two pretty different teams really in terms of the fact that you've got a game on the Sunday and a game on the Tuesday? You probably won't be able to play exactly the same starting 11 on both times.
Yeah, I think you're right in what you say there. It won't play. Like if you have somebody like Paul Scholes or Ryan Giggs playing on Sunday, then they won't play on Tuesday, sort of thing. But I mean, it tends to rotate squad a little bit as well, especially during Christmas, because you do have so many games. So I expect a couple of different sides. I think at home against Sunderland, they'll play two up front, and then maybe against Birmingham away, it'll go back to the five in midfield again, and then have the one player up front. So you've got a shift in players there. It depends how intense the games are. I mean, if Sunderland take the game to us on Sunday, then obviously it'll be a tough game. Players might get a little bit more tired than what they would normally get. And then with the game on Tuesday, you might have a couple of players struggling for fitness, things like that. So I fully expect them to rotate a number of players, but I think the core of the team will remain the same.
Sunderland's in-form player at the moment won't be playing as well, which will be a bonus for us. Obviously, Welbeck is our player, so we'll be ineligible. But in terms of predictions then for both games, how do you see it going? Dan, start with you on this one.
2-0 and 1-0, both to United, of course.
Dov?
I think that's what I was going to say with the Sunderland. I was going to say 2-0 Sunderland and I think 2-1 Birmingham. Because Steve Bruce has ever beaten Sir Alex Ferguson as a manager, so I don't see that changing at all at Old Trafford. And I think Alex McLeish is another one who is Fergie's a little bit of a mentor as well. So, you know, these boys, they don't like to annoy the boss. So, yeah, two victories for us in both games.
Good stuff. Well, I'll quickly give my prediction. I think 3-0 Sunderland. I think we'll come out top and, yeah, I think we'll dominate that game, to be honest. Birmingham, I think it's going to be tough. I'm going to say it will be a draw. 1-1. So there you go. Well, that's just about the end of episode 61 of the RedCafe.net podcast. Do make sure you get in touch with us on the normal email address, which is podcast@redcafe.net. Any sort of questions, suggestions, ideas, or anything United related, do send your emails in. There's also the Facebook group too, if you're not signed up to that. Please do go ahead and do that. We really appreciate you getting involved and showing your support to the show. That just leaves us to say have a fantastic Christmas wherever you are in the world, and we'll see you again next week.